Well, I grew up in Williamstown and went to Williamstown Tech and then to Footscray Tech to get qualified as a civil engineer. Basically, I worked at the old Board of Works or Melbourne Water for 35 years, then retired, then became a traveller around the world. Been to over 100 countries, many countries three or four times, so I count myself as a world traveller.
As they say, you may be a square, but you've certainly been around.
Oh, and yeah, like that's that a good one.
So was broadcasting ever in the background?
Nah, never even thought of it.
So why? How?
Well, in 1986, I saw an advert in the paper, or an article in the paper, about TRES broadcasting for the local radio station. So I rang the number, it was Peter MacArthur, and he encouraged me to actually join up. I was part of a group then, and I was coming to publicise that group. And then when that was over, he said, why don't you join up as a DJ? And I thought, oh, sounds good. I'll do that. So I did.
No training, just dropped in at the deep end.
Oh, yeah, there was no training in the old days. If you could operate a turntable, you were in.
Peter MacArthur's name crops up.
Oh, any
time I talk to somebody about the history of this organisation, I get the impression that without Peter MacArthur, we may not be here today.
I'd agree with that, yeah. I mean, there are other people too, and they did their job, but Peter was the face of the organisation.
You certainly are what I've termed one of the 30-pluses, because you've actually been here for 35 years, haven't you?
Yeah, we used to do test broadcasts to prove that we could actually go on air and maintain it. So we had to do broadcasts on a test basis, two or three a year, about 5 years, something like that.
Did your interests begin to flag, thinking, well, look, how much longer do we have to go on trying to prove that we are up to it?
Not mine, but I'm surprised that Peter's and the rest of the committees didn't, because they were probably going 10 years before I even joined, you know, doing all the paperwork, trying to get the equipment and proving to the government that we could do it. I wasn't part of that process, so I was just hanging around waiting for the next test broadcast and joined up. But after about 5 years, you think, are we ever going to get it? But, you know, they had 15 or maybe even more years. Mm. So I don't know how they maintained the interest.
What did you have to prove in that period of 5 years? How did you prove that you were up to it, that you had what it took and that the community was with you?
Well, we just had to actually do the test broadcasts, and the council or whoever was approving it would listen to see if we could actually do what we said we could do.
Which was?
Broadcast to the local community. That was about it.
to connect with them, in other
words. Yeah.
And did you feel you demonstrated that during those 5 years?
Oh, yes, for sure. Yeah, and we did because we got a permanent licence. And the day we got our permanent licence, or we actually went on air officially, I was in the studio with Peter MacArthur, that name again, and Ron Welsh. We were the three official voices that were first heard over after we got our official licence.
Must have come as a tremendous relief and changed the whole atmosphere of the station to know that.
And we didn't have the three, four studios that we've got now. We just had the one, and it was the cupboard in Cattermole Hall. So we just had the one studio. So now we can go from studio to studio, from presenter to presenter. You couldn't do that in those days. You had to wait basically until the person before you was finished. And unfortunately, at that time, I had someone in front of me who didn't want to give up the reins too quickly. So, you know, I'd get here at my appointed time, or 10 minutes before, and be waiting, you know, 5 to 10 minutes after the official time that I was supposed to be on, because the studio door was locked so that you couldn't barge in anyway. So you really just had to wait till they came out.
Today, of course, we're 24 hours. We're on FM, as we were then when you started.
Yeah.
We're also streaming on the web. Different days then, I mean, you were a smaller, very close-knit, much closer, because you were smaller, than possibly is the case today.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of people. I know the names, I know the faces, but sometimes I can't put the name to the face, because there are so many. It was a smaller unit, and we didn't go 24 hours a day. I forget what the hours were, but I think it was something like about 8 till 12 or something like that.
Was there a lot of music? Because these days it's largely music. Or was there more talk in those days?
No, there wasn't more talk. There was just music. We had, on cassette, we had interviews from people with the presenters with local clubs and organisations, which we played. But there wouldn't have been any, from memory, any on-air interviews. Not that I can remember. Mm.
Of course, you were working under very limited conditions in terms of the equipment you had.
Yeah. The panel we've got there in front of you is reasonably complicated. It was a lot more simpler in the old days. And from what I hear, it's going to get even more complicated.
Well, times do change, unfortunately.
Yes.
Don't they?
And everything was done on cassette in those days, or vinyl. There were no CD players here.
What do you remember mostly about the people? You mentioned the fact that, you know, that you remember the names, you can't necessarily put faces to them. But because it was smaller, you probably became closer as a result and will remember some of those colourful characters that were in those days.
Well, you could be a character in those days, like on a footy field. You can't anymore, unfortunately. Anyone with some sort of different quirk, you know, often gets sort of tried to be ironed out. Yeah, there are a few more characters then than there are now, to be honest.
And I think this applies across the broadcast industry. The eccentrics, the colourful characters, they're few and far between, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. As I mentioned, on the footy field, you have to be part of the team plan. There's nothing much for individual flair. I mean, sometimes the really talented players are allowed a little bit of free reign, but... Yeah, you've got to stick to the team plan.
Have things become blander, do you think, because of that?
To be honest, yes.
In those early days when you got your licence, after you'd done 5 years' worth of test broadcasts, how close did you feel to your audience? Did you really have a bond with your listeners?
Yes, more so then than now, because I used to follow at one stage for a long time John Hutchison and Ken Burness, and they often would go to the aged care homes during the day and they would get some requests and stuff. Well, being on before them, people would start listening before they came on air, so they were listening to me. And I would get 20 to 30 requests myself. I don't officially take requests anymore because people weren't ringing up. So, yeah, I felt really close to the audience. And I've got to say that there are a lot of lonely people out there and they would often ring up and just want to have a talk, which was a little difficult when you're on air, but I managed to do it. And I got close to a number of people. There was one, Ruth in Kilsyth. There was a Ruth in Croydon as well. But Ruth in Kilsyth, I really got close to her and I met her a few times socially. So, yeah, she's passed on now. Mm.
And they used to confide in you and perhaps expect you to relate to their issues, their problems.
Yes, for sure. There was one particular woman, I think she was being at least emotionally abused by her husband, and she would say things to me and I would try and, in my limited way, try and help her. I think I had an effect. I'd like to think so anyway.